I like the way you pronounce Pilates. Stop and get your latte and do Pilates.
We have iOS 15 beta 6 this week.
Beta 6, baby.
And there are you know, as there always are in late summer betas, major changes are bound.
Although I guess specifically in this case, one application in particular.
Yeah, usually by now we're settling in on no changes.
Because the normal timelines, you have like, you know, 5 or 6 betas of every 2 or 3 weeks of stuff happening, and then it calms down a little bit, and then they, you know, pack in a little, you know, a bit more substantial things in beta 5 and beta 6, just because in Apple's timeline, the middle of August is basically when the code has to get frozen for the phone launch, you know, for at least the 0.0. Obviously, a lot of the time we've seen them have to like rush around and release a 0.1, you know, on actual release days, like a day one software update. But the like shipping firmware on the phones generally is frozen around mid August. So if we're currently testing beta 6, it means Apple is basically finishing beta 7, right? Because that's just how the lag works between what the outside world is testing, what Apple's actually
Those new wallpapers
doing
in there. Yeah,
you got to put the wallpapers in there. But so from around beta 6, it's basically like no new features, and then they kind of shift to like a once a week update cycle, where it's just like bug fixes, and then whatever they need for the hardware features to go along with the phones, they just shift them in, and you know, in the GM release. So what do they call it now? It's not GM.
It's not General Master. It's Master Seed. Is it? What is it? Something like that.
Release Candidate.
Is that
That's it?
No, I thought
they went away from anything. They went away from the Master Slave terminology, right?
Oh, okay, so it's RC.
Yeah, so now it's just RC.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we talked about this probably last week or the week before about how, like, you know, whatever Safari looks like in beta 4, beta 5, doesn't really matter, because what's going to be in beta 6 is pretty much what's going to ship. And if it looked like, you know, the old design in beta 6, that's what was going to ship. But it turns out Apple have basically done a big old 180 on us. Well, to a degree, right? So
I mean,
they have now
called
on beta 6.
Back in the first episode, like after WWDC.
Yeah. They on beta 6, what they've got now is an appearance option. So you either have the mode called Tab Bar, which is the version where all the UI is at the bottom of the screen. And then they have an alternative appearance option called Single Tab, which is what we think of as like iOS 14 and before. It's not identical to previous versions of Safari, but it's very, 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 very close. Like, you have the address bar along the top, with the reading list controls and that refresh buttons up there. And then at the bottom, you've got your standard like toolbar of share, bookmarks, tabs, and back and forward, right? There are some minor tweaks compared to like the previous years. Like, the window tinting stuff does actually survive through to what they call single tab mode, or what we call like old mode, right? So if you're scrolling the web page, the top address bar does actually take on the tint color of the website that you're visiting, which obviously didn't happen in previous releases. And there's minor adjustments for the fact that like downloads are in a new location, tab groups obviously exist, right? But in general, if you look at Safari on beta 6 with single tab mode on, it's basically what you had before. Any normal person, any regular user, could use your iPhone on beta 6 with that mode turned on and not have any, basically not be any the wiser that it was any different, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the quote tab bar mode, and I don't understand why they've decided to call them tab bar and single tab, because I feel like they should just call it like bottom and then split or something. I don't know. Like, tab bar and single tab do not sound like good descriptions of these two different modes. But the tab bar mode is the one where all the UIs scrunch down to the bottom of the screen, but it's not the same as what they had in previous betas where they had stuff at the bottom. What they've tried to do is try to appease the masses, because now they've basically gone to this kind of like double height design where you've got the address bar on one row and then the toolbar of back forward navigation, share, bookmarks, and multiple tabs below it. So you basically have like what you would have at the top of the screen shrunk down and pushed to the bottom of the screen along with the tabs. And then you don't have the effect anymore where the tab bar is like floating over the page. Like, before, it would have like a little gap at the bottom of the screen. It would kind of float behind it and it'd be like blurred or whatnot with a big shadow. Whereas now it goes edge to edge. So you just have like a full width toolbar again, but the toolbar is basically double height. So that's what they've done. Firstly, what do you think about the fact that we'll talk about like the redesign of the bottom bar in a minute, but just like the first question is about, what do you think about the addition of like the get out option of, okay, you can just go back to how it was. Like, some people said it doesn't feel very Apple. Like, what do you think about it?
I think on the iPhone, it's just one release later or a couple of releases later than what they did on both the Mac and the iPad, which was you've got, you know, something that's more in line with what they envisioned. And then you've got something that is a compromise of a little bit of the new, mostly the old, just looks a little bit different. So on the iPhone, I think that is one of the things that you know, if they didn't do, it would be like, well, the iPhone is the most used browser of you know, the version of Safari anywhere, probably. I don't know, but just that's my guess. And for it to not have the same sort of safety mode as the other two versions of Safari had, then I think that would have been odd. In terms of two different UIs, the setting makes it seem that way. The setting makes it seem like it isn't just two very different UIs, that it's, you know, like you said, it's single tab and multiple tabs is how they describe it. But it really is. It really is a different interface in a big way. You know, very similar to apps that have like legacy design modes from like the pre OS X Lion days, Mail being the big one there. But that wasn't even on iOS. So I don't know that there's an example on iOS that's like this. You know, you can always tweak and customize Mac apps. And if they've got a popular legacy version for just, you know, longtime Mac users, then that's a thing. But on the iPhone, it certainly is. It's very different. But then we get into like, which one do we prefer? And I think it's interesting because in the first episode we recorded from WWDC, you referred to the new design as very alien, which I think was a good description, but then how we felt about it was different. I thought it was neat. I thought it was a big departure from what was, and that it fit my appetite for some big change, not just some new theme, but some big change into how things are laid out. And then of course I actually was surprised by like the amount of feedback from, you know, tech critics at least. And I'm disappointed that we have gone so far to have like a watered down version of a redesign, or you can use the previous design and they call it, you know, different tab modes when really it's not quite that.
It's like different whole system appearance.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite was probably beta 2. I don't know if things changed between beta 1 and beta 2, but I feel like beta 2... Well, it was whenever, I guess the option was there, but whenever I used the option to always keep the floating, you know, address bar visible and not have it shrink down into the bottom of the screen, whenever that worked,
that sliver of time where that setting actually worked.
Yeah. Whenever that worked, that was my favorite. Like if I had a choice, that's what I would use because it felt very modern and, you know, it gave me the bottom address bar for functionality, but it also wasn't ugly. Like it was, I think we've necessarily gone to function over form with the mm-hmm. redesign, where, you know, you can use old reliable the other way, or you can have a very like designed by committee. But I mean, people like it, so I guess it's a good thing. Like the people who here's where I'm curious: will people like what the redesign is enough to not just use the old design, or will they just use the old design and they were never going to use a new design if they had the option anyway?
Yeah.
Cause I, as someone who really had, I mean, there were always areas where the beta 2 version could have been improved, you know, getting to, you know, a reading list was hard, still kind of is unless you use the old way, getting to private mode, like those things are things that were really put away, especially bookmarks, but that's, you know, we discussed that. I don't think bookmarks are quite as popular as, the other features. But if they had surfaced those in a way that was, you know, made more sense. I mean, when they put everything behind the action button, that was the most aggressive for sure. But I didn't hate it. Like I knew where everything was. It's behind that button right there. Then you scroll through the list. So,
When they had the version of the floating where the share button was like the primary action of that button, like you pressed it and it just went, like the share actions were like at the top and then all the, you know, the hamburger menu of rubbish was below it. That was probably the best version of the floating design. The original version where it was like the dot 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 menu and it first just gave you all the random actions and share was one of the actions. That was the one I hated the most because the main thing I do on Safari is either make a new tab or share the page, right? Yeah. And sharing was so buried before they switched it around like that. And I think the switch around was probably beta 4. And I think we said at the time, like, they could probably ship it as the beta 4 version and it'd be all right. Like it's still going to get backlash, but it wouldn't be like dire straits, you know? Like, it was still going to be new and it's going to take an adjustment period for people. But it was, they'd sorted out the primary issue of, like, the beta 1 version, even, you know, there were still many things on the plate. But if it came down to it, I think they could have probably shipped the beta 4 version and been all right for a few releases here. It wouldn't have been like a national catastrophe.
Yeah, beta 5 is when it really went downhill, because they were trying to cram the old design functionality into the new design.
That's when they put, like, the reload button next to the address, like the URL and stuff.
That's when the address bar was basically a toolbar, but in a minimized space. So that wasn't great. And I mean, I didn't prefer that when it came. It's like, oh, this is becoming a really compromised design. And now it really is like, do you want to be able to swipe between tabs or not? And do you want your address bar to be in the bottom or not? And I don't know. I mean, I think maybe just because it's different and new now that, and also I was fond of what was in beta 2 and 3, that, this new one, I can't judge it without thinking about what could have been. And again, I know I'm in the minority on preferring the earlier design versions. But I do feel good that I at least said it out loud on the first episode of talking about iOS 15. But the new one, I use it for a few, like, okay, so here's my score so far. On the iPad, they shipped a version, like an option to have it look like the old way for the most part, where tabs are in a separate row from the address bar. I tried that, didn't love it. So I took it back to the where it's on the same line. And I like that. That was one of the things that was criticized, but I prefer that. I'm glad it's an option. Same thing on the Mac. When I started using the Mac again, then I tried out the way that they show where it's on two lines and where it's on one, and I prefer the compact version of that. The iPhone version, so far I'm like, I like the new way and the new way, but the iPhone version, which I like the new way all along until now, is it doesn't look good at all, and I'm not sure that there's any functionality gain for me that makes it better to use in the old way. And the old way, this is something I described to you, was that in the old design, you don't always have some Chrome of the browser on the top and bottom of the screen. So if you load a web page, you're just looking at it, you do have the share toolbar at the bottom and you've got the address bar at the top. And if you scroll up on that web page, the toolbar will go away and it's just web content. Like, you've got the minimized toolbar at the top with just the address name, until you tap it or something, but then
or scroll.
And then the tab bar goes away. And so if you've got, an iPhone 10 or later, then you've got the rounded bottom of the phone and the web goes corner to corner, which I like a lot. That's the old design. The new compromise design is, you will always have Chrome at the top and bottom, even if it's just like white space with a line, a pixel line.
On the tab bar design, i.e. the new one, I don't think they need that like border at the top of the screen. Like, they cover over the status bar, I guess, but you only really need that when you're at the very top of the screen. Like, if you're just scrolling the middle of the article, they could just have that like blend in with the page, I think, like, and only appear when you like pause to tap or something.
Yeah,
because it kind of ruins the illusion a little bit.
Yeah,
but I don't
care so much. Like, the change was cool at first, then the change got watered down for me. But at the end of the day, it's Safari, it's the browser, and you've got a couple of options. Pick which one you like the best. And I could see myself if they remove one half of the Chrome that takes up either the bottom or top or both, then I might really prefer the new way, just because, hey, you're closer to what it was and you got the cool swiping in between tabs feature. And, that's nice. But as long as it's the way it is right now, where it's more Chrome than the old way, even, then it's not for me.
Yeah. And like, personally, the new way design is a lot more palatable than it was when it was floating, right? Like, and I don't hate it anymore. I still probably prefer the old way, like the original look, but it's not terrible. The main thing I don't like about this one is, like, I feel like they kind of rushed it in just to get it in the beta, right? But like, the distance between the toolbar and the address bar is really close at the bottom of the screen, and the way that the address bar's like inset, it kind of looks a bit weird when there's only like one tab and stuff. So, but that's more like aesthetic complaints rather than functionality, which is what I was, you know, mainly driven by before. So it will be interesting to see whether people, you know, when it actually ships, do people hate it so much that they seek out the switch button and change it around? And what's interesting is Apple has actually made the switch button quite prominent. Like, it's not just an option to go into settings and find it. You also, if you press the little, like, AA button, which is like, you know, page controls of text size and request the desktop stuff, like, in that menu on beta 6, the first option is show top address bar, and that switches the design around. So Apple's, like, very freely just letting people go, look, we have two designs here and you can choose what you like. So they're, I guess they're expecting complaints, so they've put that there very prominently, whereas if maybe they were expecting most people to just get along with it, they'd have just had the option in settings for, you know, the diehard complainers to go and find, seek out, but the average user would carry on with the new design. Like, and the whole thing about them having two options now for, like, a significant check, like, it's not just like the difference between, like, list view in Mail or something. Like, the whole structure of the UI changes around when you flick these toggles. That, like, equilibrium, I don't think will stand long term. What's happened here is they saw all the complaints over the beta season. They appreciated they couldn't ship it as it was, but they also didn't have time to, like, finish the new design. So they've basically got as far as they can with it, and then because they know it's not, like, fully baked and there's still rough edges, but it's time to ship, right? Like, September's here, time's ticking. They've gone, like, well, we'll put in the design as it is, but we know it's not perfect, so we'll let people go back if they want to. And then maybe over, like, 15.1, 15.2, they'll iterate on the tab bar design a bit more. And maybe by the time iOS 16 comes around, the bottom oriented design is, like, finished and acceptable to most people. So when iOS 16 ships, they just remove the option for single tab. Because I don't see the two massive differences in appearance, like, sticking around forever. On the iPad and the Mac, it's, like, less extreme, right? Because it's just the difference between, is the address bar on its own row or is it in line with the tabs? But the iPhone design, it's like you're going from one row to, like, two complete toolbars and navigation bars on top things. Like, the whole behavior changes in a big way. And it's not just, like, an aesthetic argument about, oh, Apple should just make a design and stick to it and make people get along. It's also, like, functionally, every time they want to go and add a new feature now, they're going to have to, like, accommodate two different, completely different ways to invoke it and find it. Like, it just becomes, like, an engineering nightmare. So long term, I think they're going to have to choose. They're either going to be like, well, we're going all in on bottom, or we're going to just take it out and everyone will just go back to how it was. And maybe the release of this into the public will kind of act as, like, a little voting system, because, you know, Apple, like, pretends that they don't listen to people, but they really do. Like, if people have enough backlash, stuff gets changed. That's how the magnifying loops come back. That's how the date picker wheels have come back. You know, that's how the FaceTime switch camera button got restored, right? Like, if they see the stats and a higher percentage than they would expect have actually gone to change to the top address bar mode and stuck with it, then they'll take that as feedback and maybe they'll just give up on the whole initiative. And in iOS 15.3, there's no two options anymore. It's just how it looked like in iOS 14. So that's something to keep a lookout on. But I think they have finally got to a point now where it's not a catastrophe anymore. They can ship this. A lot of people will be happy with the bottom design. If they're not happy with it, they'll flick the little saying and they'll just go back to how it was. And so they've solved the immediate term problem of, you know, what a user is going to think when this thing installs in their phone. So they've at least addressed that. The longer term issue of, like, what's actually the best way to do this layout, they've kind of basically punted and deferred it into the future. But I prefer they do what they've done now. Like, obviously you'd prefer ideally that they get it right and have time to finish it in times for the release, but clearly that hasn't happened. I would take what they've done here, offering both options, compared to what they did in the things I just listed, where they basically just shipped the bad version for, you know, a version or months or even years, and then they finally reverted it. Like, surely having the fallback option be available immediately is better than annoying people for a whole year before they revert it, you know.
R.I.P. flooding address bar. I miss you.
Happy Hour this week is brought to you by Headspace. Wouldn't it be great to have a pocket-sized guide for meditation that can help you sleep, focus, reduce stress, and improve your sense of overall well-being? Introducing Headspace. In just 10 minutes, Headspace can change your life. The Headspace app offers easy-to-access guided meditations. And they're one of the only meditation apps that are advancing the field of mindfulness with clinically validated research. Headspace is backed by 25 published studies on its benefits, with more than 600,000 five-star reviews and over 60 million downloads to date. It has meditation sessions for every situation, and it really can help you feel better. If you're feeling overwhelmed, well, there's a 3-minute SOS meditation to try. And if you need some help falling asleep, then the specific wind down and relaxation sessions are for you. And say if you're a parent with children, you can even choose meditations that are designed to get the whole family up and moving and involved in the morning routine. I signed up on their website and they do a really nice job of guiding you into the world of meditation. It's nicely designed and it's super easy to get started. When you make an account, they ask you if you're new to the whole meditation scene or if you're kind of an expert. And if you are new, it will give you like some basic starter packs that aren't too long, so you can just kind of get in and relax and then build up to, you know, the more advanced courses and the longer sessions. And of course, once you've got an account, you can use Headspace on iPhone, Android, and on the web. They've got great native apps for iPhone and Android, and the website's pretty cool too. Headspace makes it easy for you to build a life-changing meditation practice anytime, anywhere. You deserve to feel happier. Headspace is meditation made simple. Go to headspace.com/Mac today to sign up. That's headspace.com/Mac for a free 1-month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. HEADSPACE.com/MAC. This is the best deal offered right now. So go to headspace.com/Mac today for a free 1-month trial with access to Headspace's full library. Thanks to Headspace for sponsoring the show.
Yep. And that's the podcast for the week, right?
Yeah. Safari dominates everything.
Safari's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there are other features of iOS 15, or at least there were until Apple began putting stuff on the chopping block. Because like we were talking about with the beta cycles before, beta 5, beta 6 is also the time when you get to see what's actually ready to ship. You know, this is the time when they make the decisions on stuff that they're going to have to push off to future versions. And they did the same thing this week. Most notably, SharePlay has got the axe.
I didn't see this coming. I mean, maybe some people did. I felt like this is, you know, if not for SharePlay, then what? And so there's not SharePlay, and there are other things that are going to ship. It's going to be an update to your phone, but it's, yeah, if not for SharePlay, then what's the big thing here?
Yeah, like, so I guess SharePlay is a kind of sub feature of FaceTime, and in general it's probably a decent rule that you can say that FaceTime features never make it for the 15.0. And I guess so far the link stuff and the, you know, the grid mode and all that other stuff, that's so far coming out in the first version, so I guess well done on that part. Although that might also change, like especially the web links, I could see getting pushed off.
But. Sure. Yeah,
but SharePlay, like, we tried it out and it didn't seem too bad to me. Well, like,
I don't think we ever got, well, so what, we had TV working very well. So, mm-hmm. so that was, we just wanted to stress test sharing a TV episode and that worked great. And that was
the music didn't work.
Yeah. Music is what didn't work. And just yesterday, I still hear people saying like, there's no use for, like, they don't have a use for SharePlay in their lives. And especially because it's FaceTime based. And you know, I believe you. but me and then the people in my life, we use FaceTime often, almost daily. and just yesterday I was like trying to play a song over FaceTime for like comedic effect, and you know, it didn't work because of, it was a group FaceTime call and it was like whoever's audio is, you know, taking priority, and it just wasn't working. And I was thinking, man, if iOS 15 was out by now, then I could have used this then. It's
so you think people see SharePlay as pointless? You've heard that said around?
Yes.
I don't think it's pointless.
I don't either. I think that if you don't use FaceTime, then it's not a thing that you start out with. But if
like,
you,
Is it going to be super, super, super popular? No, right? But I don't think it's pointless. Like, you know, if you're a really, let's just say Ted Lasso, for instance, right? You're a really big Ted Lasso fan. You're at home. Your friends are at home. You know, even you know, out of pandemic land, when you can visit each other and stuff, you're not going to visit each other every single day, right? There are plenty of times where you're just at home and you know you're on a group text channel or whatever, you're talking about the latest, you want to talk about the latest episode, you want to watch it together, and what do you have to do in the current like system? You have to be like, okay, I'm pressing play now, right? And then if someone pauses because they're going to the toilet, they get out of sync. Like, I think it solves that use case pretty well. Like, people spend their lives on FaceTime, not necessarily group FaceTime, but one-on-one FaceTime calls. People do constantly, and they, you know, I know people who just have FaceTime running where they're playing games and stuff. Like, if you could have the same music playing, you know, have the same playlist running over both people's phones while you're just chatting or whatever, I think that's really cool. Like, you know, then the new Ed Sheeran album comes out, you're like, ah, I love it, let's listen to it together, and you just go through the songs. You know, if you're, whether it's just friends or your significant other's gone away and you want to enjoy something together, like a TV show episode, you can do it through FaceTime. And obviously that will link to the Apple TV if you've got Apple TVs as well. So it's not just, you know, having to stare at your phone screen. You can have it share play direct to the TV as well. I think that's a great idea. And as much as we see it as like more of a niche and less popular, younger people, kids, you know, teenagers, they use FaceTime way more than we do. And I can see them doing this kind of stuff, like, obviously, you know, at launch is going to be TV Plus only, but Apple had, you know, Disney and HBO Max and all these other companies saying they were going to support it. It'd be nice if Netflix supported it, but they didn't say it. But, like, I think there's a pretty big base of utility for it. Like, I don't think it's going to be, you know, like iMessage apps where they kind of faded into irrelevance. I think this would be a thing that kind of sticks around and people use it, you know, once a month, a few times a year. Like, even if you're only doing it three times a year, it was worth Apple doing the feature because... In other words, the current workaround in absence of this feature is really bad. Like, you press play, it gets out of sync, it buffers for someone, they fast forward, they pause, you know, like, managing that is really, really annoying. So just being able to have it automatic is really nice. And I think wasn't one of the launch partners at WWC TikTok, right? I could plenty see people just chatting on FaceTime and just scrolling through TikToks together at the same time. Like, I don't think that's irrelevant or niche at all. Like, people will do that.
Yeah, let's see. So you're right that at WWDC, they had a slide that showed all the partners, including HBO Max. And I never got to do I never got to have the experience where you try it over, you're using the Apple TV and FaceTime, you know, from your iPhone or iPad. That would have, I guess, been the next thing to actually try to do. And not just for the sake of like testing it, but, you know, maybe actually using it in real life. But it wasn't that they had no partners because they had partners committed to it. And maybe they weren't making progress fast enough, or maybe Apple wasn't making progress fast enough on the feature. And so they certainly weren't ready for implementation in third-party apps yet. But I was surprised by this. And I think that, it's nothing to do with, I think its benefit is hardly related to pandemic and quarantine. Even in the U.S. in the South where I live, it's really bad right now, and to the point where, you know, it doesn't matter if you're vaccinated, there's still a lot of concern. And that was not where we were a few months ago, but that's where we are now. And so once again, like, you know, local friends, I don't get to go and see as much as I did even 2 months ago. You know, my son had a birthday this past week and turned 4, and we didn't do a party. And I even asked a friend, do you want to go out and get dinner? You know, we'll bring the cake and everything. And even that was like, not really right now, because it's kind of bad right now. But again, you know, outside of pandemic and COVID, then the other scenario is I have friends who live in Florida and Texas, and we talk all throughout the week. And regardless of COVID, we will always necessarily talk throughout the week, not in person because of the distance there. And
I mean, if me and you wanted to enjoy anything together,
yeah,
we're not gonna, you know, get on a plane. If we just wanted to watch, I don't know, a movie together one time or something, like, FaceTime's the only way to do it.
I could see a scenario where, like, with no irony, we watch a new Apple TV movie at the same time.
Yeah, you know? For sure. It's just time zone permitting, right? But I could see it happening. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they haven't announced this, but I think they're going to roll this feature into Fitness Plus as well down the road. So you could do, like, Fitness Plus workout with friends and, you know, do it at the same time. And, like, I think there's a lot of potential with this feature. They probably just hit bugs, you know. Synchronizing multiple people over FaceTime is probably quite a complicated challenge. They just hit some bugs. They just, well, we can't ship it for the 0.0. We'll have to push it back a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm. It does kind of suck, though, because SharePlay also includes screen sharing. So if you just want to, like, share your screen over FaceTime, that's also disabled and won't be coming in the 0.0, unfortunately.
Mm.
So tech support over FaceTime, which is definitely something I do a lot, won't be simplified for a while, unfortunately.
And that one felt like less innovative.
Yeah, I mean, it's just instead of showing your camera, it's showing the screen content. Yeah. But that is unfortunately gone as well. They said SharePlay will be re-enabled in a software update later this year. So I guess 15.1, 15.2, 15.3 kind of time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Other stuff that, by the way, that is technically an iOS 15 feature, but won't make it for the 0.0. You've got all the ID card stuff. So supposedly you're going to replace your wallet by putting your driving license in your wallet, which was always kind of a pipe dream because which city or state is going to join on. They spoke a little bit about a TSA partnership, but I don't think it comes to any surprise that that won't be available anytime soon, at least not in the 15.0 release. There's app privacy reports that are coming later too.
Didn't they say that the whole time though?
Yeah. Some of this stuff is just like recapping what they kind of said from the beginning. So app privacy reports is like the equivalent of what you see when you browse on the web and you go and see that little like card in Safari, which tells you all the trackers on the websites. It's basically that, but for apps, it shows which domains they're contacting, which privacy sensitive service they're using, like location and calendar and photos and camera, and it gives you a little like rundown of that. I think on the current release, you can get like a very technical export of it. So if you're like a security researcher, you can use iOS to export like a, you know, like a waterfall of network activity. But in terms of like something that's directly user facing, has nice little graphs and stuff, that's what's delayed to a future release. Custom iCloud email domains are also not coming at launch. That's the thing where if you use iCloud Mail, which I think is like probably Apple's worst service in existence, so I wouldn't recommend it, but I know people do. You don't have to use an @me.com address if you want to get mail through iCloud Mail. You'll be able to use a custom one, but that's not coming initially. And then also, this is a weird one, right? 3D navigation in CarPlay. So, you know, they showed off those new mapping features in those select cities, right? Mm-hmm. And that includes if you've got a multi-story road where you've got like bridges and the interlocking roads that go above each other. Well, on iOS 15, on your phone, it will be able to render that in 3D so you can more clearly see which part of the road, you know, on an elevation, there's less ambiguity because you can actually see a 3D version of it. Well, that's shipping on the phone, but that's not shipping as part of CarPlay until later in the year.
Yeah, which I think was from WWDC. I think that and app privacy, those two things were known to be after release, like later this year kind of thing.
But why is CarPlay a problem? It's just video. It's just taking content off the iPhone. Like, I don't understand why that's delayed.
I don't know, but yeah. it was intended to be late. But everything else here is you know, was going to be on release day and now isn't.
And then the kind of wild card is universal control, right? That's like the macOS Monterey feature where you can use your keyboard and mouse on your Mac and use an iPad nearby just by dragging your keyboard and mouse off to the side of the screen and it zooping over to the iPad or a second Mac. That feature hasn't been officially confirmed to be delayed by Apple yet, but it is yet to appear in any beta release at all. So the future's bleak, I think. Like, I think it's going to get delayed. They just haven't announced it yet.
Yeah. Kind of makes you think maybe they should just say, like, iOS 15. This is what it's going to be throughout the year. Like, what if they did that? We talked about that a few years ago. I think iOS 12 was one of those where it was kind of wonky on the release. But they do so much in the later releases often enough that there's some unannounced features that get added in point updates.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if this means we'll see fewer of those as well. But I mean, I guess effectively, like, what you can use right now in iOS 15 beta is what you'll get on release.
And yeah.
It's not nothing. I mean, it's hard to list it out without referencing something, but it's not.
The two biggest things are live text and focus modes, right? That's like the two biggest things.
The biggest thing on the iPad is they fix multitasking. You got app library and you can open apps from the home screen when you're in an app, and you can put apps together by putting them on top of each other. And there's UI for split view and slide over. So.
Yeah. And you could say Safari changes, although if you use the old design, then it's basically unchanged.
Yeah. Tap groups. So like the tap groups are good. I think
I haven't found a use of tab groups yet.
Yeah, I have one they call finance, and it's every web page that I open when I pay my bills.
But my problem with tab groups is you can't lock them in place. So if you browse to another website accidentally, then your original set of tabs are lost because now it syncs your latest state. I almost want it to act more like bookmarks, where you load up the tabs, you do what you're doing, and then when you go back to the tab groups later, it kind of reverts back to that original set of bookmarked items.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think the fact that both exist, so if you wanted to never to change, then you can use bookmarks and bookmark folders, and you can even open a bookmark folder all in tabs. So that's a thing. But I've used bookmark folders for certain things. I want to check this website every day for an update, 30 websites a day, for example. And I find that what I would find is that, 2 years after I don't want to check it anymore, it's still on my list. And then to go and edit the bookmark folder is more steps than I should, than I want to do. And so to edit a tab group, it's just changing out, what tabs are open, and it's really easy. So, you kind of get the best of both worlds. It just depends on which ones you want to use. But I'm still doing that, but I think I did blow up my WWDC 2021 tab group. I think it used to, I think it got lost in beta, it's beta, so it's reasonable, but, I think on one device, it fell out of memory in a big way, and then it went out of memory on all the devices. So, R.I.P.
So yeah, I'd say the biggest flashiest things were Safari changes and SharePlay, and SharePlay has been deferred and the Safari changes have been minimized. So
something that's interesting to me, in CarPlay there are 4 versions of the beta wallpaper, which is lately has been the release wallpaper as well. Mm-hmm. it's like four different tones of the same thing, and it was in beta 1, so I thought probably we get these in beta 2 or 3, and they've never come to the iPhone or iPad. It's just CarPlay.
That's kind of weird,
strange. Yeah.
Happy hour this week is also brought to you by Raycon. When the world gets too loud, I just love to lose myself in my own music. And popping in Raycon wireless earbuds is a great way to do that. If you're working out at the gym or just trying to concentrate when working at home, you want to hear what you want to listen to, not what is going on in the rest of the house or your environment. Before you go out and drop hundreds of dollars on a pair of wireless earbuds, you need to check out Raycon's wireless earbuds. Find out more at buyraycon.com/happyhour. Use Raycon to listen to motivating beats at the gym or listen to podcasts while commuting. The Raycon earbuds come with a bunch of gel tips to suit your personal comfort preferences, and unlike some other brands, they don't stick out of your ears. Raycons feature a 32-hour battery life, so you can listen to what you want, when you want, for a really long time. And even better, they start at half the price of other premium audio brands, but they still sound amazing with rich sound quality and bass. Raycon earbuds are stylish and discreet, with no dangling wires or stems to distract anyone during video calls. And Raycons come with a 45-day happiness guarantee, so you really can't lose. And Zach, I know you've had a chance to try out Raycons, right?
Yeah, my favorite part about them is how flush they are. They remind me of, if you've seen the adventure movies, when they all have an earpiece in, and it's super modern, and it doesn't look like an ear, like something that's sticking out of your ear. It has that feel to it, and for a good value, good price, you also get good performance. So if you're, I can remember being in college and barely being able to afford rent, and you certainly couldn't afford $250 headphones or earbuds. So having something that gives you comparable performance for a reasonable price is really compelling.
So create your own personal soundtrack with Raycon. Right now, Happy Hour listeners can get 15% off their Raycon order at buyraycon.com/happyhour. That's buyraycon.com/happyhour to save 15% on your Raycons. One more time, buyraycon.com/happyhour. Thanks to Raycon for sponsoring the show.
So next up, there's some new stuff from Mark Gurman of Bloomberg. Where did this go into? What news story was this put into?
This was part of one of his Power On newsletters.
Oh, okay.
Because he had a newsletter this week, which was just here's all the hardware coming from Apple this fall, but there wasn't any like surprises, right? It's Apple Watch Series 7, iPhone 13, Mac M1X MacBook Pro, iPad Mini 6, and an update to the 9.7-inch iPad as well.
There is value in recapping like even all the known entities coming, because people, you know, we've been doing this for a career, but like, you know, not everyone's onto the whole September iPhone thing.
Oh yeah, like there's no problem with like Mark covering it. I just meant for like the podcast, right? Because we'll do obviously our big event rundowns closer to the time, because there'll be invites not too far away actually. But kind of like nestled in the report, German said that Fitness Plus was actually getting some new features. So they're going to build on what they did for Time to Walk, which is kind of those like guided audio workouts where you walk around for half an hour and you get like a celebrity motivating you in your ear. They're actually going to build upon that with Time to Run. So a similar concept, but for, you know, active runs, and also audio meditations. So if you're doing, you know, like Pilates or something or yoga, you can actually listen to like relaxation things from there. Again, presumably from like celebrities and stuff. And does Nike Run Club offer like a time to run setting today, Zach? I know it's something like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They've got, I guess it's their trainers. And I don't know if they do celebrity. I know they do celebrity voices. For some of the encouragements, you know, like milestones, but they certainly have had, you know, for years, like time-based run workouts where you listen to something, and I don't know if it uses music or not, but I think it's just storytelling. But
like a narration, yeah.
Yeah, presumably Time to Run will work just like Time to Walk, which mixes in music as well, a little bit.
Although presumably they're not going to be like a celebrity soothingly talking to you about their like life story on a run. I mean, it's going to have to be a bit more active.
The Nike ones, I mean, some of the stories are really touching. You know, some are about like one that stands out to me was about cancer and losing someone who motivated them. And that was like an impactful experience to hear that while running. But yeah, I was thinking with Time to Run, it'd have to be somebody that's like super high energy and fast paced talking, and you know, it would be a bit different than something that we've seen so far.
Yeah, and I like Time to Walk, but I've only done a couple. I'm really waiting for the Stephen Fry one to come out, because I'll listen to Stephen Fry do anything. So if I have to walk half an hour to hear him, I'm down for that. But I think that one's coming at like the end of this run of Time to Walk episodes, so that won't be for like another like 2 months. But I'm waiting for it. And then, yeah, like Time to Run would be cool, and meditations. I don't really do like yoga and stuff, but for people that do, it's a natural extension of like the Apple Watch's functionality. And it kind of ties into the setting where you can have Siri announce like your workout progress. Like if you're running, you can on Watch USA, it can like tell you when you get like 10 minutes in, oh, you're half the way to your 20-minute workout goal and stuff. Like so it kind of neatly dovetails with that.
Yeah, I like the way you pronounce Pilates. Like Pilates.
Pilates.
Stop and get your latte and do Pilates.
I'm pretty sure, well, at least in Britain, that's how everyone says it.
Yeah, well, we deal what we want with language here.
Yeah, you do what you want, we say it correctly. That's that's how it goes, right?
Pilates. Iced, please.
Also this week, there were Apple Watch Series 7 renders. These kind of confirm what we saw earlier in the year from John Prosser, but they also came with some nice little dimensions. So the current 44mm Apple Watch measures 44 by 38 by 10.7. So thickness is 10.7. According to this leak, which is like CAD schematics, right? It was going to be now the new 44mm watch will be 44 by 38 by 9mm. So it's going to get 1.7mm thinner. And I've always been one to say the current Apple Watch is too thick. So a 2mm decrease is... No, not unsubstantial, probably noticeable. So I welcome that very much. And I think when you're doing the kind of like squared off design, you generally need thinner bodies, because when an external design is like rounded, the curve kind of hides some of the thickness because it kind of looks thinner at the edges, right? And only bigger in the middle. But whereas Apple's like modern design aesthetic is, you know, squared off edges, that style, having it be as thin as possible makes it look better, I think. Because like if it's the original thickness but squared off, it looks even thicker than what it was before, even if it's just like an optical illusion. So stripping it down to like 9mm versus 10.7, I think that would be appreciated. I'm very looking forward to that, actually.
I'm looking forward to anything about the Apple Watch changing this year, because I want to buy one that isn't aluminum. and I have the review unit aluminum still. And even with a Series 5, it's like, we want the most data though. And it's very much function over form in that way. Even if I have a nicer Series 5 that I could wear. And so I've really been tempted to, like, when we were like 6 months away, 3 months away, it's been hard to not buy things. I think it's been easier to not buy a new watch because as you get closer to release, then the more premium material versions are in fewer supply. And so it's been kind of impossible, which has been great for me. and there's even been stuff like making the rounds. I think maybe it even came from Mark's newsletter. But the idea that maybe Series 7 won't have titanium or an edition version or an MS version. And, you know, then there's been stories. Well, now look, all the inventory is completely sold out, not just in stores, but online. And I think that is just more about there's going to, you know, you can continue to sell a version of the Series 6. Like if it stays in the lineup, you're going to keep making those unchanged, but you never take addition and just keep it in the lineup at a lower price. You always get rid of the addition and replace it with the, you know, newest series, but in addition. So, anything different about the watch, but especially a redesign. But because Series 6, even though, like, you know, I wear it every day and not a Series 5 that's nice and material, it still feels like it was like a kind of a small year-over-year update.
Yeah.
Even in terms of, like, I mean, I think the big thing was your blood oxygen saturation levels. And that's good to see. It's cool to have. But something more exciting for this next year, I hope.
Yeah, those sensors are just kind of like, you do them when you first get them and then you just forget about them and hope you never have a problem. And you never really appreciate the value of them if you're you know, thankfully in good health, right? Like if your blood oxygen is always high, you're never gonna get a notification about it. So it's almost like you didn't have the sensor in the first place.
Yeah, I started exercising every day over the last couple of weeks, and after a long period of not doing that routine, and after the first week, I got the alert that my like cardio levels are not good. And of course, this is what it's going to say when you start exercising for the first time. But at first, I was thinking, that's kind of discouraging. It's like you've been doing more than usual. And so now you have enough data to get that measurement. And it isn't like your cardio levels are down, but good job on, you know, keeping it up. It was just like your cardio levels are really low. You should do something about that. It's like, no, what happened?
They need to word it differently. Like, yeah, you're back on track. Let's go and get your cardio up.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to upgrade my watch this year. Like, I'm on a Series 4, so I've been desperately waiting for like a good year, and this seems like a good chance to jump in. I'll probably still only get like the cheap, you know, aluminium version, but the new design is pretty cool. I'll get Always On for the first time, which is something I've been wanting for a while. Yeah. And I think battery life is probably going to stay the same, but battery life doesn't bother me. Like, I put it on charge at night, and then I wear it in the morning all day long, and it's fine. Always On is basically what I'm wanting, and the fact that it's going to look slightly different is a nice bonus.
Maybe it'll have like sleep tracking hardware of some kind.
That, I mean,
because isn't sleep tracking just so watered down?
Sleep tracking on the Apple Watch, the Apple's sleep tracking implementation is so bad. Like, yeah, it's just do what the third-party apps do, where it just automatically tracks your sleep. And you just wear it and you go to sleep. Like, the Apple Watch version is so intent on, like, setting up a schedule and then making you, like, start the schedule every single night and stop the schedule when you get up. Like, it feels so backwards. The third-party apps like Pillow or Auto Sleep or any of those ones, you just have the app run and you go to bed and then you get your reports automatically. Like, I don't know why Apple has been so, like, I was really hoping that was going to be a feature of WatchOS 8, right? Like, the number one thing for WatchOS 8 for me was the Always On stuff. And I'm super glad they've actually fixed that now. So, like, a lot more apps can use the Always On display. And then the second one was, well, a second would be third-party watch faces, but I knew that wasn't going to happen. So then the other one behind that was, like, you know, actual proper sleep tracking from Apple. So I don't have to use a third-party app if I want to do it, and they haven't done that. So anything in that department, I'd greatly welcome, because, like, the Apple Watch hardware as it stands today can offer a much better sleep tracking experience. You just have to download a third-party app, yeah, which is kind of wild, but that's how they landed. Like, if Apple wants to, like, enforce people to get on regular schedules, that's fine. Just have that as an option. Just let one of the settings be automatically track my sleep and just put the metrics in for me. Mm-hmm. I want it to just do it and not have to think about it. So yeah, Apple Watch Series 7,
yeah,
and coming up soon.
I want to mention here too that I've been starting to exercise daily again for the first time in a long time, way too long. I've got to experience the Apple Watch fitness focus, and I think the more different contexts of focus in iOS 15 that you can use, the more you appreciate the feature. For example, you know, if you've got just a general focus mode, then you can have one set of rules, people who contact you, things that can get through, things that cannot. But then like for fitness, I have fewer things that get through for fitness because it's going to be, you know, A, for a limited period of time. And then B, like, you know, there's certain things that you don't want to interrupt you, especially when you're working out. So I've been using the Apple Watch fitness mode, and I love how it works because if you set it up, you can configure it to always begin whenever you start a workout. So there's no thought about it. There's no, you know, turn on this do not disturb setting for the next hour or until you leave, or, you know, remember to turn it off. It's start the workout, the focus fitness kicks in, and that set of notification rules is enabled. And when you end the workout, you, like, the first thing you get is, here's your list of notifications that you missed while you're in fitness mode. And then you get to like the summary of your workout, which I quite like. It's a feature that I just turned on, you know, once and then get to appreciate every day. And it's also interesting. I mean, the thing that you can do with focus is syncing them between all your devices. And so in theory, when I begin a workout, well, actually in reality, I begin a workout, my Apple Watch, iPhone, iPad, and now iMac all go into a fitness focus, which it's just kind of funny to think about, but kind of makes sense to me. Like, obviously you can turn it off and not have them sync and just do it, you know, only on the Apple Watch. And I guess would probably come to your iPhone as well. But, kind of makes sense that if I go over to the gym and do an exercise, I actually don't want my, Mac to like keep chiming with alerts, you know, for if there's anyone else around. So I really like that. It's also just kind of funny to think about the Mac being in fitness focus and having like that icon appear on the screen. But, it's,
Well, maybe you're doing a Fitness Plus workout via AirPlay.
Yeah,
like, I haven't really like used focus modes much too yet. Like, I want to, but I haven't just set them up. And I feel like setting up is quite a big barrier. Like, you have to get around to it, and then you have to manage it and edit. And maybe once I've got a Mac on Monterey, I'll probably have more motivation to do it. I just carry on using Do Not Disturb.
Yeah, for certain contexts where there's no like trigger. You know, where workout is, okay, you begin the workout, so now it turns it on. Or driving is, it detects that you're connected to Bluetooth or CarPlay, then it turns on. There are some, like, personal where there's not quite a trigger for it. I mean, I don't know, I don't think location is one, but there is smart activation, which you can turn on, and it will take into account location and timing and patterns and habits. I tried that out of enthusiasm, thinking, like, This will be really cool. But in practice, it's just bananas crazy. Like, does not make sense to me at all. I would get just random alerts saying, do you want to activate personal focus right now? And I'm like, no, absolutely not. No, this, what are you thinking? So
I just checked, right? The options for focus automations are time. So just time of day, location. So you can say like when I arrive at work, when I leave from work.
Yeah.
Or when you open an app, it can do it based off that. And then what you're talking about is the smart activation mode, which automatically will turn it on at relevant times throughout the day based on signals like your location, app usage, and more. So you can set it out manually to be like strictly this time, this location, that location, this app, and that app.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can have like what you were just saying there, basically let the phone guess. And depending on your preference for guesswork, it's going to either annoy you or be helpful. Like, I think they've got it as an option because they understand that setting it manually is like a big ordeal. And a lot of normal people are just never going to bother. So they want to try and make it intelligent. But I struggle to believe that level of intelligence can be good enough to accurately predict your daily routine on a regular basis.
I've gotten to where I really like setting trigger. Like, I like not relying on Apple or not relying on like iPhone settings or iPad settings or AirPod settings to do anything clever. Just there's a sense of like, appreciation for just being able to do it yourself and never guess where the AirPods going to connect to. If you play a video over here, but you're listening to music on this device, is it going to switch to that? Or if my son uses my iPad, is he going to get mad because he can't hear anything and it's coming through my headphones? So there's a lot of those. And we discussed a few weeks ago the new option to preserve your creative settings for having night mode off. And I finally got around to just kind of putting that on 9to5 Mac. And there was like a huge reaction. There was like a huge response to that, of like positivity. So
yeah, people want it.
Yeah. So I know we do like feature requests and just think like, wouldn't this be neat if you could do this? But I think that we also have a big appreciation for, isn't it great when you can just tell it what to do? And the opposite of that would be something like Siri wanting to pick your default music player or default podcast player. And there's no UI for it. And, you know.
Because like the Siri suggestions that appear on your lock screen is like, maybe right now you want to go here, you want to navigate here, you want to open this app. Like they're fine and quite often they're useful. But the reason that they are useful is that they're not like...
They're passive.
They're more passive, exactly. Yeah. Like they don't get in your way if they do the wrong thing. Like if a Siri suggestion guesses incorrectly, you just swipe past it, you unlock your phone, you get on with your day, right? Whereas something like focus modes, it's like actively changing the behavior of your phone if it guesses wrongly. So that's why the intelligence has to be more carefully balanced. Finally this week, Happy Hour is brought to you by Smile Software and Text Expander. Supercharge you and your team with the power of Text Expander. It lets you do more with the same resources. Less repetition, fewer errors, and greater consistency. Turns the things that you type into reusable snippets that can be used again and again and again. Say goodbye to repetitive text entry, spelling errors, and even trying to remember the right thing to say. Save time and be consistent while you're at it. Speed through email. Just type a short abbreviation that expands into a reusable form with fill-in-the-blank fields to customize the reply as appropriate for the current message. It's just so much better than copy and paste. Text Expander snippets let you maximize your time by getting rid of the repetitive things that you type while still allowing for customization and personalization of your messages. Text Expander makes it easy to give your team the right words for every situation. Get it right every time. Whether you need to keep legal happy or just delight customers with effective answers, you can rest easy in the knowledge that your team has got it covered, with everything being stored in the Text Expander shared snippet database. With Text Expander, you keep your team accurate and current with all the latest changes and messaging for your business and brand. Just create a powerful snippet once, and then you can use the assigned abbreviation to let Text Expander do the rest of the job for you, eliminate spelling mistakes, and speed up repetitive work. Text Expander works on any platform, in any app, anywhere that you type. Take back your time and unlock your productivity with Text Expander. Listeners to this show can get 20% off their first year subscription. Visit textexpander.com/podcast to learn more and sign up. That's textexpander.com/podcast. Thanks to Smile Software for sponsoring the show.
Okay. We've been putting this Apple TV Plus topic off for a few weeks because we've been so packed with things to discuss otherwise that the time has come. I'll let you kick it off.
Sure. So I think I've said this on the show before, but like Apple's TV show pace has been pretty good, whereas their movies lineup and slate has been, you know, lacking and slow, and they have stuff in production, but it hasn't come out, you know, it just hasn't materialized to like a common, reliable release pattern yet. And that's still the case, but they have keep buying huge projects to, you know, put into production. They acquired this movie called Argylle, which is a budget of around $200 million. And that includes casts like Henry Cavill, Bryce Dallas Howard, Bryan Cranston, Dua Lipa, like a massive star-studded cast list. And it's basically for like a spy movie where Henry Cavill will be the spy. It's based on a book that's coming out next year, but they're already, the producer has like loved the book, so they're already going to production on the film. And the idea is that it's a standalone film, so the $200 million is just for the first film. But I think Apple is hoping, and the production company is hoping, that if it's popular, they can then do sequels and kind of spin out like a little mini franchise of, you know, two or three films, and maybe have like the equivalent of James Bond or something as like an Apple original. I mean, it sounds pretty cool. And anything with Bryan Cranston in it, it's got Samuel L. Jackson in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty cool project. On similar scale, Apple's about to win a bid for a $100 million movie starring Jennifer Lawrence about a Hollywood agent called Sue Mengers. She was like big in the 80s and stuff, and she propelled a load of talent to popularity. So this is kind of like a biopic about it. Apple was supposedly bidding against Netflix for this film, but they're gonna skew the deal thanks to their extensive cash reserves, let's put it that way. And that'll obviously be coming out next year. Also, Coda is a film that actually has come out. That's the film that was acquired by Apple at Sundance. So it won all the Sundance Awards, and Apple bought it in like a $25 million record, which is like record-setting for a Sundance film acquisition. That was available now to stream on Apple TV+. It's got good reviews, and it was actually shown in... It had a limited theatrical run, and what kind of made it interesting was that it became the first feature film to be shown in the US and UK with open captions. And open captions are where the subtitles are on the video screen. So they're just like burned into the video. So yeah. When every screening of the film was shown with captions on the screen. Whereas normally what happens when you go to a movie theater and you're deaf, to be able to see the subtitles, you have to go to special screenings that support wearing these kind of like polarized glasses that kind of reveal the captions. And of course, Coda is about a child of deaf adults. It's about the deaf culture and experience. So Apple were arranging this so that it'd be the first film to have like burning captions too. That was just a really nice like culture fit, which I thought was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then also they've announced that the Tom Hanks film that they've acquired from Universal, which is called Finch, that's going to debut on Apple TV Plus on November the 5th. That's about Tom Hanks is like dying, I think, and he's got a dog and he doesn't want to leave the dog on his own. So he builds a robot to look after the dog. That's the general premise of that one. But like a classic Tom Hanks plot right there.
Yeah.
This sounds cool.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just a general like the movie stuff is in development. It's still not up to the level that it needs to be. And a lot of this stuff is like, you know, next year or the year after that. But like, for instance, the Scorsese project's in filming right now. That'll be a big deal when it eventually comes out. But at least they've got Coda out right now. They've got Tom Hanks' film coming in November. They've got a Tragedy of Macbeth drama film that's coming out as well, and some other stuff. So it's not like empty, but it's still not quite to the degree of like the television side where they have, you know, a big original series pretty much every single month.
Mm-hmm.
They also announced this week that they're going to bring Carpool Karaoke to Apple TV+. So this was one of Apple's like original series projects alongside Planet of the Apps back in like 2016, 2017, before TV Plus was even, you know, a figment in their imagination. This was their original like dabbling in the scene. But Couple Karaoke has been free to watch if you have either an Apple TV subscription or an Apple Music subscription. But it was branded as Apple Music content, right? So it would get some featuring Apple Music and then it would also be available in the TV app. But the problem was, as soon as the featured tile for it went away, there was literally no way to find it. Like, discoverability of the Carpool Karaoke series was nigh impossible in the TV app, unless you knew to directly search for it.
It's like My Beloved Long Way Up.
At least Long Way Up is like in the TV Plus tab, right? You can go to Nonfiction and you can find it there.
You can find it. Okay, I always have to search it.
Okay, so for Long Way Up, if you go to the Originals tab, you scroll down to Nonfiction, you click see all, it will be there in the list, right?
Okay.
Again, the TV app has a lot of problems with discoverability and finding things. I'm not saying it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But at least if you go to the tab, you can click a button and it will be there, right?
Is Carpool Karaoke not Nonfiction?
No, Carpool Karaoke isn't in the tab at all today.
Is it fiction?
It's Nonfiction.
Well, okay, so it's Nonfiction.
Yeah.
I think it's scripted, though.
Well, yeah, it is kind of scripted, but it's Nonfiction. Yeah. But my point is, because it currently not branded as TV Plus content, it doesn't get... It's not in any of the lists. You can click every single see all button on the TV Plus tab. You'll never find it, which is just stupid. So what they've announced this week is that starting with season 5, it's going to be branded as an Apple TV Plus original, which means it will actually be featured in the TV Plus tab finally. Mm-hmm. So if you do enjoy that kind of thing, you'll actually be able to find it now. Whereas before, unless you knew directly to search for the name of it, you had no chance at all. So some logical sense has come out of this thing after 5 seasons. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
And then finally, the big daddy, Foundation, the sci-fi epic series premiering September 24th. Just today, they released the official trailer for it. So they've had a few teaser trailers, but today they had the 2.5 minute, like proper full trailer ready for the series launch next month. And it looks just as good as the teasers. I'm super excited for it. Give me all that sci-fi. It looks great.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'm having a good experience with TV Plus right now where each Friday at some point in the day, I'll watch the second season of Ted Lasso, newest episode, and then I'll watch right after that, like back to back, I'll watch Smigadoon, which I've really enjoyed. I really have. You told me,
although Smigadoon's finished now, unfortunately.
Yeah, you told me about Smigadoon, and I did not know what to think, and actually ended up liking it a lot. So, yeah, it's a neat thing when you can go to TV Plus and there's something that you actually want to watch on that week and every week. And the more of those, the better. You know?
And they're definitely running up for a pretty good full season. Like,
no kidding.
They've got Truth Be Told this week with Kate Hudson co-starring now alongside Octavia Spencer. They got C the week after that. They got The Morning Show in September. They've got The Jon Stewart Show in September. They've also got Foundation in September. They've got Will Ferrell and Paul Rudd in The Shrink Next Door in November. They got Invasion. That's another huge budget sci-fi series they've got coming in October. Like, they got a lot of stuff coming at the end of the year. So it's going to be a good few months to be a subscriber for sure.
It's all going to look very good on the iPhone 13.
Yeah.
Or as I say,
my mini LED MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
Like, eventually, Apple's going to up the price, right? It's not going to be $4.99 forever. For now, it is, and it's a pretty good deal for what you get. Like, if they have some really high budget premium things for not very much money. Like, if you just look on the amount it costs Apple to make the stuff and the amount they're currently making off of it, the scales are way tipped in the viewer's favor. So if you find shows you like, right now it's a pretty good value.
Yep. All right, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. If you have any feedback for the show, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ApolloZac. That's APOLLOZAC. Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZAMayo.
And if you want to hear the ad-free version of the podcast, then subscribe to Happy Hour in Apple Podcasts. And every week you get ad-free versions. And
thanks very much to everyone that does that, of course.
Yeah, $4.99 a month or $4.99 a year, I think it is.
So, correct.
Yeah, cool. Got it right. And we will see everyone next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.